Welcome to episode 1444 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. This is chapter 4 of our series on the life of the Apostle Peter. In our last episode, Andrew returned from the Jordan with astonishing news. He believed he had found the Messiah, and he introduced his skeptical older brother to Jesus, who immediately gave Simon a new name and a new identity. Today we come to the moment when that identity begins to take shape, as an ordinary morning on the shores of the Sea of Galilee becomes the dividing line between Peter's old life and everything that follows. Acts of the Apostles, Part 1, Chapter 4.
At some point, Andrew and I left Bethsaida and settled in Capernaum. I cannot tell you exactly when anymore. Years have a way of blurring together when measured by seasons of fishing rather than calendars. Bethsaida would always be home, but Capernaum offered opportunities that a growing family could not easily ignore. More boats worked from its shoreline. More merchants passed through its markets. The great road that linked Damascus to the Mediterranean ran nearby, bringing traders, travelers, and business. If a fisherman wanted to make a living, Capernaum was a good place to cast his nets. So we built our lives there. My wife, my mother-in-law, Andrew and I, we became part of that bustling lakeside town. Looking back now, I sometimes wonder whether God was already arranging things long before I knew it. For it was in Capernaum, not Bethsaida, that many of the most important moments of my life would unfold. There is a particular kind of tired that comes from working all night and catching nothing. It is not just the body, it is the arithmetic. You count the hours against the empty nets, and the numbers do not work. And somewhere in the counting, you start to wonder if the numbers have ever really worked, and whether they ever will. You can spend your whole life on the water, amass decades of experience, and still question whether you know what you are doing. Would the catch be better in Bethsaida? Should I have ever moved here? That is where I was the morning everything changed. Sitting on the shore in the grey light, hands raw, nets spread out to dry, already dreading the conversation with my wife. Nothing to take to market. And then Andrew said,
"Did you hear what I said, Simon? He is here."
I followed Andrew's gaze, but didn't need to do that to know who my brother was talking about. It was Jesus. The man who had called me Cephas, the man who had looked at me and seen something I did not know was there. The crowd had followed Jesus down to the shore. They pressed in close, the way crowds do when they want something. All of them wanting to be near enough to hear, near enough to see, pushing forward without meaning to push. And Jesus looked at the situation, and then he looked at my boat, and then he looked at me. He smiled.
"I think I'm going to need your boat. Would you put out a little from shore, so they can hear?"
"What do you say to that?" I said yes. I pushed out a few feet into the shallows and sat in my boat while he stood and taught the crowd from my boat. Sometimes he moved, sometimes he stood still as the boat rocked in the gentle waters of the Kinneret. And I listened. I had heard teachers before, synagogue teachers, traveling rabbis, Pharisees passing through with their careful interpretations. They all sounded like men explaining something they had learned from other men who had learned it from other men. This was different. He spoke as if the words were his own, as if the law were not a fence he was required to maintain, but a living thing he understood from the inside. I forgot about the empty nets. I forgot about the arithmetic.
"The kingdom of God is near, not near as a storm is near when you see it gathering on the horizon. Near as a seed is near to becoming a harvest. Near as dawn is near when the sky is still dark."
When he finished teaching, he turned to me. He smiled again. And what he said next made no practical sense whatsoever.
"Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch.
I want you to understand what I was being asked to do. We had fished all night, experienced men in familiar water during the hours when the fish run. We had caught nothing. And now a carpenter from Nazareth was telling me in broad daylight to go back out and try again. Seriously. Every instinct I had said no. And I very nearly said it. Master, we worked all night and caught nothing. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. Because you say so. Not because it made sense. Not because I expected anything. Because something in me, the part that had listened to him teach from the boat, the part that remembered the way he had looked at me when we first met, the part that still carried the name he had given me weeks before, that part said, just do it. What happened next I have described many times since, and I still do not have words large enough. We let the nets down, and the nets filled, not with a reasonable catch, not with the kind of catch that makes a good story at the harbor. They filled until they began to swell and tear. We signaled to James and John in the other boat to come help us. Both boats filled until they began to sink. I have thought about those fish many times. Not one of them was where they were supposed to be, doing what fish are supposed to do in daylight. Every law of fishing said the nets would come up empty. Every law of fishing was wrong. Do you know what I did? I fell, not gracefully, not in some dignified posture of reverence. I dropped to my knees in a boat full of fish, with water coming over the sides, and I said the most honest thing I had said in years. Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man. I do not fully understand even now why that was my first response to a miracle, but I think it was this. In the presence of something genuinely holy, you do not think about the miracle first. You think about yourself. The light comes in, and you see what the light reveals. And what it revealed in me, in that moment, was not a man ready to follow a Messiah. It was a man who had spent decades being ordinary in ways that had occasionally crossed into worse than ordinary. I was afraid. The kind of afraid that is actually closer to awe, when the distance between what you are and what you are standing next to becomes briefly, unbearably clear. He did not go away.
Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people.
From now on. As if there was a before and an after, and the line between them was this moment, in this boat, with these fish, on this ordinary Galilean morning. He was right. There was. We brought the boats to land, and we left everything and followed him. That is how the gospel writers tell it. Terse. Clean. As if the decision were simple. It was not simple. I had a wife, I had a mother-in-law, I had a boat and nets and a brother and obligations, and a life constructed carefully around the fact that the fish needed catching, and the taxes needed paying, and the world kept demanding its due, and I left it. Not all at once, and not without looking back. But I left. I have been asked many times what it was that finally moved me, and I have given many answers over the years. But the truest one is also the simplest. He had already named me. Weeks before, by the Jordan, he had looked at me and told me who I was going to become. And standing in that boat with the impossible catch around my feet, I understood, for the first time in my body rather than just my mind, that a man who could do that was a man worth following into whatever came next, even if I had no idea what came next.
Follow me, and I will make you a fisher of men.
Many of us spend our lives staring at empty nets. We measure our success by what we have caught, built, earned, or accomplished. And we grow discouraged when our efforts produce little to show for themselves. Peter's story reminds us that God often does his deepest work, not when we are succeeding, but when we have reached the end of our own expertise and strength. The miracle was not merely that Jesus filled the nets. It was that he revealed himself to Peter in the middle of an ordinary workday and called him into a larger purpose. Jesus still meets people in the places of exhaustion, disappointment, and uncertainty. He sees not only who we are, but who we can become through his grace. And when he says, "Follow me," the invitation is not simply to believe something new, It is to become someone new, to be continued.